You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Hello and welcome to Line Noise. Slightly different episode today from what you might be expecting, because I spoke to Edwin from Osric Tentacles when he was in Barcelona. The band were in Barcelona playing a gig. The gig was absolutely excellent. And so it's kind of electronic music adjacent rather than electronic music in itself, maybe. Anyway, I loved Osric Tentacles when I was a young kid, and I love them today. I had never seen them live before, so I was really excited to check out their gig, which is at Wolf. Who are they? They're kind of psych, prog, ambient, space rock. That's really hard to kind of define because they're one of those bands that are just all over the place, basically. They've been going for 43 years. And they just keep on going strong, just doing their own thing, basically. I did think maybe they're a little bit like the British Grateful Dead without all the kind of stadium biggery, stadium being bigness, stadium hugeness that is around that. I'm not sure if that's quite correct. In fact, I asked Ed about that. What else we talk about? We talked about Todd Rundgren. We talked about getting advice from George Harrison, who is the person that advised Ed to pick up the guitar. We talked about a nice shimmery afterglow and a lot more. Line Noise comes to you with the support of Cupra, and I really hope you enjoy this episode. Ed, how are you doing? It's a real pleasure to speak to you.
Well, I'm doing very well, thank you. So recovering after last night's gig and on not so much sleep, but enough to get the job done. So that's probably good.
That was Madrid, right?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Which I think, so we were talking about this before, and you said that it's only like your fourth Spanish gig.
Yeah, pretty much, actually, if I think back to it. Yeah, it's about the fourth one we've done here for some strange reason. So.
Yeah, no, that really surprised me. So I was also looking down, right? I said I've been a fan of yours for years and years and years, and you've got a massive catalogue. So I was looking at, you know, the most recent things you've done.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to find your most recent release was a collaboration with Todd Rundgren.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't that I was in the room with him, but I had to do it as a thing. Yeah, no, somebody said, look, we need you to do a remix of this Todd Rundgren track. And there it was, and I sort of did it. And I just reinvented the track and put some of my sort of guitar-y stuff on it and a few bits and bobs and gave it back, and they were happy. It's a strange direction for me because it's very unlike a lot of stuff I've done. I like Todd Rundgren very much, but I prefer his instrumental spaced out guitar solo cosmic stuff, really.
I was going to say, you're a big fan of his work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, just before that, another unexpected collaboration, which was a cover of California Dreaming with Melanie.
That was along with the same thing. Yeah, this record company, there was a situation where I owed this record company a couple of remixes, and they threw those couple of tracks at me, so I did it. And that was even more unusual, that Melanie track. It's not my style either, but I can, if I need to, do music like that.
I mean, it was an obligation, but it turned out really well, right?
It turned out all right, yeah. I mean, yeah. It was going through my head like crazy when I was doing it. I could hardly sleep at night because it was a simple rotating thing inside my mind, but yeah.
Because that's very far, from what I understand, that's very far from how you make music. You make music by going off in the studio and just playing around, right?
Well, yeah, pretty much starting and then continuing. If I get a good start, then the track's pretty much there, but it just needs writing and filling up. But yeah, so I don't very often write a track and then think it's all ready to go and I'll go in the studio and record it. It's the recording is the writing sort of thing and the producing as I go along sort of thing.
I must say, it sounds quite blissful. I think you described it once as you wake up in the morning, have a cup of tea and go and play in your studio.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's quite nice, really, to be honest, yeah. Yeah, I've done that for many years. It's how I carry on, basically.
Melanie, I was reading, was one of the first Glastonbury headliners.
Right, I didn't know that.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. That very first, was 1970, the first one?
Something like this, yeah.
I was going to say if you saw a kinship there, but you didn't know that, I guess.
Not at the time, no. But funnily enough, I do live there now, so in Glastonbury. So.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, recently moved there, which is lovely.
I thought you were in Scotland.
I was. And then I was in Devon, then I was in Glastonbury. Before that, I was in Colorado in America, and before that, somewhere else.
So I was thinking with the Todd Rundgren remix and the Melanie remix, Do you enjoy doing things that people don't expect of Osric Tentacles?
It's quite fun, yeah, it is quite fun. I try and do that a little bit within Osric Tentacles as well. Go out on a loop somewhere. Keep the AI guessing. Really, yeah.
Well, that's one thing I love about the band. It's like, I don't think AI could ever even conceive of Osric Tentacles.
Well, I've heard some, but not AI writing tracks, but AI doing versions of tracks I've done.
And?
I was amazed when I first heard it till I realised what it was. And then I thought, well, that's very scary and kind of clever and all that. Yeah, someone did a dub style load of tracks. Yeah, all about 15 different Osric tracks, all done as a reggae style, quite convincingly. And then there was another one, I can't remember what it was, but there's been two of them that I've heard recently, and it's quite interesting. I thought it sounded great, weirdly enough. Hate to say it, but yeah.
Did you sort of enjoy it in a slightly guilty way, maybe? Or do you just not worry
about
it?
Well, before I realised it was AI, I was amazed that someone had gone to that length to try and reproduce these tunes. It's ridiculous. There's a sort of it was one reggae one, and there's one kind of more techno one, you know, with sort of stomping beats on it and stuff. And it was, I mean, it has to be said, it did sound quite good, you know.
I mean, I suppose what I was thinking more about AI was like, I can't imagine, obviously, if you say make an Osric Tentacles track, it can do it because, you know, there's
so
much.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have any humour. It wouldn't have anything, would it? This is the thing. There's no humour involved in AI productions, I find, anyway.
And, well, also, like, it would never, there's no sort of logical way, if Osric Tentacles didn't exist, yeah, that it would make it, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. What kind of prompts would you put in?
I know. Well, maybe it just takes an average of all the tracks and makes one out of that somehow. The mind boggles. I'm not interested in it, really. I'm just happy to do it myself.
So your son, Silas, is
yes.
in the band.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated by this. I got two children.
Right.
And they absolutely don't listen to any of the music I like ever.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, did he always sort of listen to your music?
Well, I mean, because he was in the house with me when I was making it. His bedroom was above the studio, so he definitely heard it in his sleep. And loved it. He's always loved it, yeah. Now he's been in the band quite a long time now, and he's knows what it takes, taking care of business up there with the psychedelic swooshes and spirals on his synths and stuff.
What's it like being in the van with him? I mean,
it's very good, actually. It's very easy because I'm almost telepathically linked to him in a way that I can just look at him and he'll go, right, okay, yep, dung, 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 you know.
Oh, mate.
And, and he takes care. He's kind of setting up the stage pretty much as well now and all that because I can't really be bothered with that anymore. I've done my time for sure. Now it's much easier to do these gigs than it was before because the equipment basically has shrunk down to microscopic size and sounds twice as big, so suits me really. I used to carry a Marshall amplifier around and it wasn't light, and I've got a nice little simulator now which does the job for sure.
Obviously you've got many more years left in you, but could you see, you know, sometime when, you know, I like Kraftwerk or something, you shuffle off this mortal coil and he keeps the band going?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping so. I'm training him to keep it sort of alive. Yeah,
oh, great.
For sure. Yeah, I was going to say I look forward to seeing what happens. see it from space or watch. But no, good. And he does his own music as well, and he writes stuff, and it's pretty good. And we just finished a new album, which is the thing, actually. We delivered it about 3 days ago. And he did the mastering on it.
Oh, great.
So between me and him, bouncing it back and forth till it sounded what we consider pretty much perfect, as far as we can tell. And I'm very happy with that, yeah, at last. It took its time.
What can you tell us about the new album?
6 new tracks. It's going to be having our current lineup featured fairly heavily. Mm. I normally do sort of a few real drum tracks and a lot of programming, but I think half the tracks are with Pat, our drummer, and Corey's on there, Silas on there, Saskia also is on there, and maybe they'll like it, you never know, you know, but I'm happy with it anyway. I'm very happy with it.
What do you think, like, this sounds like a harsh question, but what do you think the new album kind of adds to your catalogue?
That's a tricky one. See, because to me, it's the same thing. I'm always just in there swimming around these tracks, and I don't particularly design them beforehand or anything. They just appear and evolve. And so I suppose if I take a step back, I'd say that it's a bit more live sounding in places, actually, because of the real nice drums we got with Pat. We went into a posh studio to get his drums down, so they do sound pretty crispy. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. It's an energy, quite a lot of energy. And the tracks are fairly huge, actually. For the vinyl, side one is a crazy side of music. It's three huge tracks with all sorts going on. Quite happy with it, really. Yeah.
Well, I will ask about Lotus Unfolding, which is your 16th studio album.
Mm-hmm.
One of the songs I really like, because we're here in Spain, Crumple Penny, sounds a bit flamenco influenced.
Oh, maybe it does. I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, maybe it does. Maybe it does, because there's acoustic stuff, isn't there? There's a big acoustic solo in the middle. And it's that same scale, isn't it? It's, yeah, all right. Great. Okay, I'll have another listen to it with that in mind. Yeah, for sure.
You called writing music is like a life diary for me.
Yes.
So what specific memories does Lotus Unfolding bring back?
Post-COVID is basically what it was. And there's a lot of tracks which I'd started writing during that year when nobody was doing anything, as well as making another album. I had a load of tracks. That's all I had to do was to just make tunes and make tunes and make tunes. So, yeah, I mean, that was... I suppose it's just a time. Where was I at the time making that? I was in Scotland. Yeah, I was in Scotland, and it was just a lot of fun, really. A lot of fun. It just conjured up the last few years I had in Scotland. And so when I hear it, I go back there. It's really nice, actually. It is like a life diary. Yeah.
You once said that stopping a track is much harder now than starting one.
Well, it's finishing, yeah. Much, much harder.
So how do you know when a song is done?
Well, it isn't. It's never done. There was a quote which is that a work of art is never finished. It's only ever abandoned. At some point, you have to stop tweaking and just let it go. And
but how can you do that? Because
you have to. Because of time. There's a deadline. You know, the time is of the essence. And it is tricky to finish them. Because the spark of an idea is all very energetic, and you throw it down and put the stuff on and build it up. And it could go on forever, the tune, but you have to pull it in. You have to rein it in at the end, and then you know. So either you end with a thump or off into space is basically what it is.
Do you listen back to your old albums when they're done?
Sometimes, yeah. I normally can't listen to the most recent one for at least six months because it's too mad in the head. At the moment, I have all six tracks superimposed on top of each other going around my mind all the time because I've been concentrating so hard on it, you know. So listening to the album before last is normally a real pleasure because I suddenly thought, you know, I've kind of forgotten it by this point a little bit. And so it's nice.
Do you have a favourite album of yours or is that like a...
No, because it fluctuates. I do like the one I did actually during COVID, Space for the Earth, because it's... very still, very calm. There was nobody hassling me. And I was just told to, you know, just stay in that studio. We'll keep you going. We'll keep you alive and make this album. And so I did it completely at leisure, which was really very nice, unique feeling. A bit worrying in the mind because of the COVID stuff, but that added a little edge to it as well. So that's one of my favourites.
So my... introduction to the band many years ago was Live Under Slunky.
Oh, really? That one. Boy, all right. Yeah.
I always wondered, do you think of Osric Tentacles more as a live band or more as a studio band?
Pretty much exactly 50-50, actually.
Right.
Interesting thing about that, from my perspective, it's the opposite. Each is the opposite. One is very internal and close and small and studio and curtains shut and late night and cups of tea. And then the other one's the opposite of going out and standing... in a big crowd of people sort of basically shouting with my guitar and instruments and band, which is, yeah, when I'm on stage, I'm quite extrovert on stage, but in real life, I'm very timid. I sometimes can't even gather the marbles to go into a shop and deal with it sometimes. But yeah, no, on stage, I adopt this other persona, become the other, and that's how it seems to work, and it's good. It's a nice little contrast.
I read in an interview, you try to make sure all Osric songs have, I'm quoting, a happy and comfortable conclusion, a nice shimmery afterglow in case people are tripping to them.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah. I mean, people do this, I know this, they do. They will save their nice little things, bits and pieces, for when the new Osric album comes out, and they have a ritualistic doing that and listen, and quite a few people I know do this. So yeah, I'm responsible for giving them a nice ride, really. I don't want to freak people out and make them think there's something wrong. Even sometimes for a minute, it's good to wooze them out a bit, but then show them it's all right in the end. Like the quote, yeah, it's nice to leave them with a nice shimmery afterglow and land them in a comfortable, nice, safe place. And yeah.
Are there any Osric songs you consider to be really dark?
A few, yeah.
Yeah, what do you think is like kind of darkest?
Well, there's kind of one called Sploosh, and there's one called The Throb, and there's a few of them. It goes sort of dark, but not too dark, but a little bit dark. Just sort of tribal, pulsy, slightly edgy, uncomfortable, squeaky noises and things. Yeah, and I like that as well. I love it. There's a good moment on the new album, on the fourth track, where it sort of does dive into that very unusual, unheard of before realm, which I know about, but nobody else does yet. Funny.
How you spent a lot of time in the studio, right?
Yeah.
How much unreleased Osric stuff is there?
Most of it has gone out in some form. There's a few, though. There's definitely a little bit here and there. Unfortunately, occasionally computers die and I lose a few, you know, starting points and ideas. But quite a lot of them tucked up in the sleeve, actually, for when somebody wants to do something with them.
Are you ever tempted to do like Aphex Twin did and just release them all to SoundCloud or...?
Not without having a good old look at them. And I'm, you know, because I won't just grab them and put them out, because so I know that if I did that, I'd probably spend a long time with it.
Yeah.
So unlikely like that, because I'm normally pretty busy making the albums anyway. And when I stop, it's nice to actually stop for a minute. Yeah. So, yeah, in time we will.
The band's been going for 43 years now.
Yeah.
What is the secret to such longevity?
Well, the people all seem to chop and change, apart from myself. I think it's just that because it wasn't really designed to be to do with making money, particularly. We'd make this music whether it was earning or not, because that's more important than the commercial side of things, really. So, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'd be doing it whatever happens, but I'm very... very lucky that people actually like what I do enough to keep me going, you know, really.
I was wondering, have you ever had to compromise musically with what you do?
No. No, actually, no, I never have. No, I sort of laid that down as the ground rules from day one, in a way.
But that's remarkable, right?
It's cool, isn't it? I've got a very nice record company, Snapper, who just let me do whatever I want, you know, musically. They don't question it. They don't want to hear it before they release it. I mean, they say, look... If I say I've got a load of new tunes ready, and they say, oh, let's hear them. In fact, no, don't worry, we don't need to hear them. When do you want to put it out?
Oh, nice.
so, yeah, that's a test of time. I've been with them a long time, and there's a few records there, and they make sure they're all around the world and in the shops and things.
Because the band grew out of the free festival scene, kind of. Do you think, like, a band like Osric Tentacles could start... again these days? Does that kind of infrastructure still exist?
I don't think it does, unfortunately. No, I don't think so. It was a very fortunate time when we decided to do this. And, you know, sometimes people ask my advice, what should I do? Should I do this as well? And I said, well, not if you want to stay alive by it. It's tricky, you know. I mean, I'm just about surviving by music alone so far, you know. And so, yeah, it's it's nice. I'm very blessed like this. I don't know quite why, but I can do what I do, but I do it, and luckily other people like it as well, you know. It's very, very gratified by that.
Well, I was wondering, maybe it was because, and this was something I, for some reason, didn't know, maybe it's because you were blessed by George Harrison up in there.
Well, maybe. I mean, he didn't actually push me towards Stonehenge Free Festival, but he did encourage me when I was younger. Yeah, he really did. He said a few things which sort of hit home. He said, you can spend 6 months in rehearsal but you learn more than that in half an hour on stage playing live, is one thing he said to me. And a few other bits and bobs, you know. He was just very kind, very nice, and very encouraging. And I thought, great, you know, yes, I'm going to do that. Thanks very much, you know.
That must be an amazing thing. I mean, presumably when you were a kid, you were just like, oh, it's my dad's mate or whatever.
Not quite, no. No, it was a bit more than that. If George was going to pop in, we bloody well knew it, you know.
Right.
It's like, George is coming. He's going to do that. And sometimes, because I was quite young, sometimes I had to go to bed, you know, and I was really pissed off, but he used to come up and say hello before I fell asleep and stuff, come and say hello to me, you know, when I was younger. You know, he was a friend for a few years, really, yeah.
Did you ever get any feedback of what he thought about your music, like Hosrit Tentacles' music?
I don't think he ever heard it, actually. I don't think so. I don't think he heard it. No, it didn't really develop until after some time where things drifted a little bit or whatever. I don't know. I can't remember. I was quite young, really. So, yeah.
So, last thing I want to ask. Mm-hmm. You got a sound check. What is the least Hosrit Tentacles music you listen to? What's the one band
Okay. I love Steely Dan.
Yeah.
I really love Steely Dan. I think I bought, when I was about 18 or 19, I think I bought every album of theirs within 1 week.
Wow.
And just could not stop listening to it. I don't know why. There's just something incredible about the way they structure their stuff, and it's not quite normal, yet it's kind of normal, and the playing is excellent. And who else? There's a few I can't. I think really that's my main thing. That is really Steely Dan as a sort of slightly more commercial sounding thing that I love. But normally, I mean, my basic taste in music is very, very wide. But the thing I have to have is to be able to hear that people enjoyed making it from behind the mesh of the music. I can tell whether it was painful or whether it was joyous. And if it's happy and comes across like that, even if it's dark music, if someone's having a laugh doing it, I'm right in there. I love it. Yeah.
I know that I said that was the last question. But Grateful Dead, are you a fan?
Oh, I wish I was. I wish I was more so. It's a little vague for me or something. I don't know. I don't know quite what it is. People compare us to them quite a lot.
But I don't say, I've got a theory that Grateful Dead are one of those bands that Americans like a lot more than British people. In the same way, I think you could probably, I don't know, someone like Oasis or something like that, probably British people like more than Americans.
Yeah,
And I just don't think Grateful Dead translate, if you know what, or like, I don't know.
Some people disagree. See, I'm outnumbered with this one.
Right.
There's so many people who love it so much. But to me, I mean, it's pleasant enough. It's not unpleasant music, and it's has a lot of love in it and a lot of, you know, happiness and that. And again, so that's why I do like them. But I wouldn't. It's very rare I'll put an album on because it sounds a bit too country for me, a bit sort of American country style. Yeah. You know. So yeah, sorry, Jerry. I do like what your principles are, but I don't listen to you very often. Sorry.
I wonder. Imagine alternate universe where you're sort of, you got that big. That would be quite amazing.
Be lovely, yeah. It would be nice, yeah. It'd be lovely, yeah. Still, I think we're a bit too strange for some people, you know, a bit odd music for some people. It's not, some people don't think it's safe until they've heard it, and then they think, oh, all right, you know. Funny, yeah.
Well, look, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you.
Yeah, likewise.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.